Is it possible China is part of these high interest rates we're seeing? I'm David Brancaccio in New York. In early stock trading here, the Dow Jones Industrial Average is up 0.2%, 46 points. The S&P is up 0.1%. The NASDAQ Composite is up not quite 0.2%. Perhaps a bigger story, interest rates have eased off slightly from their sharp highs of the week so far, but the benchmark, the 10-year yield on the government's 10-year note, is still at 3.07%. That price is an expression of many forces, including, some argue, China, currently locked in tense trade negotiations with the U.S. Let's check in with Susan Schmidt, Senior Portfolio Manager at Westwood Holdings Group in Dallas. Hi, Susan.
Good morning.
Yeah, did you see this? We're now at 3.06%, a little higher yesterday, but it's, you know, interest rates are getting up there.
That's true. It's kind of hard to miss. We have not seen a number north of 3% in, you know, several years. And so to have it bumping up around that 3% and above level is actually a really good sign for the economy. And people are starting to think that, you know, maybe inflation is creeping back in.
But there was a hint I saw, particularly in the Financial Times. Analysts have noted that China has been selling a decent amount of U.S. treasuries, which it owns. And when they sell, there are more bonds out there and yields go higher. Essentially, China could be driving up U.S. interest rates. China does hold a lot of our debt, doesn't it?
So as a single nation entity, they do own quite a lot, but it's 5% of our total debt. And I think that really what we're seeing here are concerns about inflation starting to creep in. And when we're starting to see that creep in, it means forward rates are going up because people expect forward prices to be rising.
And it's not like the Federal Reserve hasn't been hinting that this is where it's going.
That's exactly right. We've gotten very clear messaging from the Fed that they will be, you know, looking to raise interest rates. And that's a message that they've been very consistent with. And I don't expect that to stop anytime soon.
Susan Schmidt at Westwood Holdings Group in Dallas. Thank you.
Thank you.
As we were just referencing, business and the economy is global. Kellogg's is the latest U.S. company to pull out of Venezuela amid soaring inflation and dwindling access to raw materials there. My marketplace colleague, the BBC's Anu Anand, is following this.
In closing its factory, Kellogg's has joined other U.S. companies, Kimberly-Clark, General Mills, Procter & Gamble, in exiting Venezuela. Shortly after Kellogg's announcement, President Nicolas Maduro announced that the factory would be handed over to its workers and continue production. The president faces re-election Sunday and says Venezuela's economic crisis is a foreign conspiracy. Kimberly-Clark's diaper and tissue factory, seized in 2016, was also handed to workers. Financed by the government, they continue to produce sanitary products. Kimberly-Clark has filed a formal request with the World Bank's arbitration body for legal action, even though Venezuela withdrew from the mechanism in 2012.
Anu hosts the earlier edition of the Marketplace Morning Report here. Now, here's the betting on the betting. Now that the U.S. Supreme Court this week paved the way to legalize betting on real sports with real money in America, here are five states expected to legalize first. New Jersey, which is where the high court case originated, Mississippi, Pennsylvania, West Virginia, Delaware, and others will likely follow. We're looking at this from many angles this week. Today, let's turn to Richard McGowan, a finance professor at Boston College, who's also a Jesuit priest. Thanks for joining us.
Great to be with you, David.
So would you regard the high court decision this week as revolutionary? Do you think this changes the country and society in a big way, or is this just an incremental thing?
Well, let's put it this way. It certainly changes where people will bet. It's been estimated that the illegal gambling is nearly $150 billion a year. So it will obviously probably expand the market for sports gambling. There's some people who were afraid to go to a illegal bookie now would probably might go out and now it makes like fantasy sports. That will be an afterthought now when you can actually just bet on the games.
That's profound, right? Because that is a whole business model, cobbling together virtual teams and competing against others who do this. You think you just bet on the teams, I guess, right?
Yeah, that's what I mean. For instance, DraftKings, which is the the fantasy sports operations operated in Boston, they already just opened up an office in New Jersey, hoping that they can open up one of the quick things for in New Jersey on sports betting. 20 states went with New Jersey on this lawsuit. So there are 20 states eagerly willing to get into this. And for instance, Pennsylvania is willing to put it online, which to me, I have to truly wonder whether the addiction part of that is frightening.
Well, that is one of the criticisms we've heard, even on this program, is the idea that this could normalize gambling, not just bring out people who are doing it illegally or doing the fantasy sports into the more mainstream system, but it also could encourage people, like, you know, every time you look at a screen or a TV or your smartphone, there could be a gambling component. Do you think those fears are overwrought?
I think they're a little overwrought, although I do think they'll be interested in games that they normally would not be interested in, which is probably one of the reasons why the NFL and some of the other sports leagues are willing to entertain this now, even though they were vehemently against it. Although the other question here is going to be is about the integrity of the game. All it's going to take is one sports betting scandal that would really put this into jeopardy.
Richard McGowan is a Jesuit priest who's a professor of statistics and economics who follows the economics of gambling. Professor, thank you so much for this.
It's been great to talk to you, David. Thank you.
So a British central banker today is apologizing for describing the British economy as menopausal. Ben Broadbent, a deputy governor of the Bank of England, said he was trying to explain an obscure term, climacteric. I'd never heard of that, but apparently it's used by economic historians to describe low productivity growth in the 19th century or something. In New York, I'm David Brancaccio with the Marketplace Morning Report. From APM, American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.